The Reserve Pool, Episode 33, Uncanny Themes. Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Reserve Pool. This is a podcast about Dice Masters and, of course, all the people who love to play it. This is Dave.
And I'm Evan.
And it's still 2015.
Yep.
Yeah, it didn't go away that fast. I mean, everybody talks about how time flies, but and I know a lot of people have made jokes about their hoverboards and everything else, but, you know, I'm okay with where we are.
I don't know. The hoverboards sound pretty cool, but maybe in a few more years.
Yeah. I don't know. You know what? Right now...
Or maybe they'll put metal in all the sidewalks and we can have it sooner. I don't know.
I think it's all great right now. Like, let's be honest. What are we doing right now? You and I are talking over a thing that we could be video calling if you had a webcam on your computer. But we did that earlier this recording day when we played a game of... of Dice Masters.
That ill-fated game of flying sidekick versus villains.
You and I are talking over, you know, several hundred miles. We're recording this. We're going to put it up in an episode that will be, like, available for free to a whole bunch of people on devices that are in cars, in hands, on computers, and, like, everywhere. We're in the future, man, and it's great.
No, I mean, more and more, it's like... You know, oh, you read all this fiction, it's like, oh, I'm going to review these files on my data slate. And I'm like, that's what we do nowadays. We have tablets. We have phones that, you know, we have phones that do all these things. Oh, it's the future, man.
We have phones that meet the minimum system requirements for, like, running the full version of, like, Windows. Now, not that they can exactly, but, like, in terms of specs with memory and processor speed and everything, these are smartphones that could, I mean, they could run Windows, the full version.
There is
a
PlayStation 2 game you can get for iOS devices. I mean, I'm not talking about, like a full-on, this was released as a PlayStation 2 game, and you can just play it on your iPhone. I'm like, man.
So, there is a lot to look forward to in the future, though, especially in gaming. And we want to touch upon that a little bit now. Last episode, if you missed it, we did talk about some of our favorite parts of 2014. But there's a lot to look forward to in 2015. And one game I am super-duper excited about is the currently, I think it's a working title, but the Magic the Gathering strategy board game. This looks awesome. It's basically HeroScape 2.0 with some changes. I don't think the miniatures will be 100% as nice. The Planeswalkers will be, but a couple of things won't be quite as nice as HeroScape. But this looks awesome. I will absolutely be getting this. I mean, no question. It is the first game that I know for sure I will buy in 2015.
Well, I hope since it's coming out in Gen Con, which is in August or late July, I imagine you'll probably buy something before then.
Oh,
so
no,
it might
I
not
mean,
be the first game you buy this year, but it's the first one you want to buy. It's the one you want to buy first and foremost.
I mean, and up there very closely, obviously, is DC Dice Masters, let's be honest. I mean, Age of Ultron, yes, I'll get it likely, but DC Dice Masters, I'm not
so
even likely. I will get it and we'll talk about
that.
It. We'll get it. Well, obviously, I'm going to get it. But DC Dice Masters is the big one for me. But non-Dice Masters, Magic the Gathering strategy board game. Oh, my gosh. Right now, please.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the details. But the premise, from what I've heard of it, I'm at least going to be taking a look at it.
Okay, so here's why I'm excited. if you've never played HeroScape, what it is basically is a very basic, but not in a stupid, dumbed-down way, a very rather basic miniatures combat game. It's played on hex terrain with pre-painted figures, then you have all their stats and everything like that, but the rules aren't needlessly complex. Line of sight is very simple. If you go down and look, like, from your character's perspective, can you see what are the hittable areas of that other figurine? If you can, great. If you can't, that's it. Height rules are very easy. I mean, falling from height and everything else, like, it's pretty easily laid out. So the game system doesn't get in the way of playing the game itself. And that's probably the biggest part to me. Obviously, this is going to have new wrinkles and everything. It's not going to have the same kind of, you know, plethora of terrain that you can build like HeroScape had. But you know what? I have all of my HeroScape terrain, and you can still get it from custom people and people who just sell it. Augie's Games is a great one for it. And I'm going to make them work together. I don't care. I will have crazy epic Magic the Gathering strategy board game matches on all my old HeroScape terrain, and it will be glorious. If you don't know HeroScape, Tom Vassell and his daughter Melody recently did a live video, and it's now up on YouTube, and you can watch that game. But it's crazy. And much like Magic, it's a big mishmash of themes. So you're going to have robots against Vikings, against elves, against like Valkyries and stuff. So whatever. It's crazy good. But yes. So anyway, yeah, that's why I'm excited. It's so good. I can't wait. I love HeroScape, and the worst thing that Hasbro did was actually give it to Wizards, and then they killed it. But now Wizards is going to redeem themselves.
And I feel that way about HeroQuest, sort of. Like, I feel sort of that way about HeroQuest, is sort of just like how I have so many good memories of it, and I really enjoyed it. And that's why I was really psyched about Imperial Assault, which I have. I know it came out in 2014. It came out in, like, the last 2 weeks of 2014. So I think I'm justified in saying that it's one of the things I'm looking forward to in 2015, because most of the additional content and most of our time to play it is going to be in 2015. So,
And to be fair, it's a pretty hefty rulebook to digest. I mean, if you've played it, you've probably only either done like a skirmish or maybe a mission or two, right?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even gotten the chance to play it yet because all of my friends are out of town. Right. Why would you release things right before the holidays? No one is around to play with me.
Imperial Assault looks really, really cool. I'm strongly considering it, but I don't know if I want to be tied into some of the stuff that Fantasy Flight does with it. I don't know, though. It looks so cool. I might... If Magic the Gathering strategy board game doesn't scratch the itch, which we'll find out in August, Imperial Assault might be what I end up with, but I'm leaning towards Magic. Another one I'm really looking forward to is Mysterium, which is this really nifty semi-co-op game where one player is a ghost and the other players are like trying to solve a murder or something. And the ghost can't communicate with players until they go into like a dream phase where you can only like influence their dreams. So you give them these cards with these neat whimsical pictures on them, kind of like Dixit. And there's a clue in that card somewhere, like you're trying to tell them something. Maybe the room that they actually need to go to is red, so you give them this red balloon, but they see the balloon shape and think maybe it's something to do with a light bulb or a party or who knows what.
Round.
Yeah, you can't really, like, tell exactly. So, incredibly innovative. Now, this was already out in Europe, and you can get it from Portal Games, I believe. I think Asmodee is bringing it to the U.S., but they're changing the artwork, and I hear that's not good. But that said, it does cost a little bit to get the, I think it's Polish originally, version over here. But it looks really cool, and I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'd heard about that one. That the premise sounds interesting. It sounds like another great like party game.
Yeah, especially like the thinking man's party game.
Yes.
Or woman's, the thinking person's party game.
Yeah, I know there's a few Dice Masters thing, and Dave is all about the
Booster Gold DC. Booster Gold, Booster Gold.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Katie's already on tap to make some earrings for you.
Yes,
not that you necessarily wear them, but
I have one ear pierced, but I don't. Well, then Lauren can wear them.
Yes. But I am actually looking forward to the Dungeons & Dragons Dice Masters, partially because, sure. Well, I've liked Dungeons & Dragons pretty much forever, and I just looking at what we've seen from them so far, I think they'll be adding some interesting mechanics, and I want to see how well the mashups go, honestly.
I'm curious, too. I'm not opposed to getting the set. I want to see more about what's going to make it unique. I think for some of these, I hate to call them peripheral sets, but in most WizKids games, it's the superhero stuff that's the main event. But so I don't mean to diminish it in that way, but nonetheless, I want to see what mechanisms these peripheral sets bring to the table that make them unique. I think that there are some cool things thematically they could do with Dungeons & Dragons, but I'm more on a wait-and-see mode with those ones simply because I want to see how they manifest.
Yeah. No, I mean... it's probably also a little nostalgia for Dragon Dice, which I know were pretty heavily panned, but I have good memories of, nevertheless.
A lot of people do. I've heard similar things. A lot of people are like, I know some don't like Dragon Dice, but I thought it was great. So, you're not alone.
I actually found mine recently. I have a giant box full of them. So.
Yeah. Well, another one I'm looking forward to is called Spyfall. And this, some people have this, but it's not widely released yet. And what this game is, everybody gets a card that's a location on it, except for one person who gets a card that's a spy. So the people with the location cards obviously know what they have, because they're all at the same location, and the spy is trying to figure out where they are. So you're asking each other these questions, and you need to give answers that are specific enough that the person who's asking you knows that you're not the spy, but vague enough that the spy can't suss out where they are based on it. So, you know, you might be at a mechanic, and somebody would say to you, oh, do you come here often? And if you said, oh yeah, I love it, I come here all the time, they're probably going to think you're the spy. But if you say, well, I didn't really expect to be here today, I'll tell you that, then, you know, that's plausible and you'll go on. So the spy is trying to figure out, like, where you are, or at least be able to answer enough questions correctly to pass suspicion. And there's a time limit, and you can accuse people, and maybe the spy can even figure out where it is that they're at. And, it seems really cool. So that's Spyfall, and I'm looking forward to getting a hold of that one. Another nifty party game.
Yeah, it sounds like not at all like Two Rooms and a Boom, but in a similar sort of vein of better with big groups. Otherwise, I'm looking another one of those released in 2014, but kind of near the end, so we're going to see more of a pull for it as we go on. Warhammer 40,000 Conquest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people love their Netrunner, and I've enjoyed Netrunner the times I play it, but I mean, I like the theme. I like Warhammer 40,000's theme, and having played the game, I found it pretty cool. I especially sort of like there's like a really distinct feeling of time progression, because it's a very like a very contained order, and you know there are really only 7 turns, so you start really feeling the pressure of like, but I have to win this planet, or otherwise he's gonna win.
It's a neat looking game.
Yeah,
it has a lot of similarities. Some really, the people who also think this strongly think it, the people who disagree with it strongly disagree with it. But I do feel that it has a lot of similarities to Blood Bowl Team Manager, which I own and I really enjoy. So I don't think that's a knock against it. But that said, it doesn't do enough different for me, my opinion. It doesn't do enough different for me to justify getting it, especially in the expandable model. That said, I think it's a good system.
And I guess a point against it, Nick, if it's very similar to Blood Bowl, no throwing goblins. So,
well, yeah. Well, Blood Bowl Team Manager. I don't know if you've heard of that one, but we'll talk about it sometime.
You might not enjoy
that, actually. Yeah. Well, I think we're both also looking forward to some conventions this year, because I believe I am planning on heading to Origins this summer with my wife, and it'll be cool to meet some other folks, maybe, you know, within the Dice Masters media group, as it were, as well as just board game podcasts in general. I'm really looking forward to that. How about you, Evan? Any cons in your future?
Yeah, I expect to be going to Gen Con this year.
Oh, yes. If you go to Gen Con, you need to grab me a copy of the Magic Strategy board game. I'll pay you. I promise.
Yeah, I may wind up getting one for myself as well, so we'll see how that goes.
Very cool. All right, so that's what we're looking forward to in 2015. Please share the same with us in the comments. But beyond that, I think we better get to our feature topic.
Yeah, I think it's feature o'clock.
Hey everybody, it's Dave here in the control room. Before we get to the feature, we're going to actually debut a brand new segment from Chris. Now, you're going to hear both Chris and Randy's voices more often now as we move into the future, as they contribute to our feature topics as well as their own segments in the show. This is Chris's, this is the first one, so give him some love, let us know what you think. Thanks so much, everybody. Here we go, Chris.
Welcome to Refilling Your Dice Bag, the Reserve Pool's guide on building your local Dice Masters community. You'll be walking alongside me, Chris, as I share my experiences attempting to cultivate a Dice Masters scene in my small hometown. This is Episode 1, Your FLGS and You. So I don't want to come across as presumptuous, because I was a newbie to gaming as a hobby at one time as well, and the acronym FLGS stands for Friendly Local Game Store,
It could be Game Shop. If you need clarification on that, I spent a lot of time forum diving for years, not ever knowing what the heck that meant. With that out of the way, let's get down to the basics. You've fallen in love with Dice Masters, and spending hours admiring the cool character dice and poring over possible strategies in your card binder are getting old. Why? Because you're not playing. So you tell yourself, "Self, I want to play with real live human beings." You head down to the closest FLGS to you, and you swing the door open only to find that not only are there no Dice Masters players, there's no Dice Masters product. Bewildered, you ask yourself, "Where do I start?" Well, I've got some advice. Step one to successfully planting a Dice Masters community is getting your FLGS on the Dice Masters bandwagon. Now, if you don't have an FLGS, and I totally understand how you feel, then you'll have to rely on the relationships you have with your normal gaming group and how easy or hard it is to get them into new games, especially when you're talking about collectible ones. For the purposes of this segment, we're going to assume that you have access to an FLGS. So how do you go about getting your FLGS on the Dice Masters bandwagon? The first thing to do is to have a conversation with the store owner. You want to politely and sincerely size them up. Open a dialogue that's friendly and direct about what you'd like to see happen with Dice Masters. Here's exactly how not to do it.
Hi, welcome to the game shop.
Do you like have Dice Masters here?
Huh? I don't know what Dice Masters is there, sonny.
It's only like the coolest game in the world, and I wish I could buy it here, but you don't even have it, so I'm not gonna.
Okay, so that was silly, but you get the point. If you approach a business owner arrogantly or with an unreasonable attitude, you're not going to get very far. Remember that a good store owner is a business person. Play to their sensibilities. Turn the subject to how they can sell you stuff. Tell them you're interested in buying the product and you'd prefer to get it locally from them. If they have a good distributor, such as Alliance or Diamond, they'll be able to order from WizKids without a problem. The next thing to do to get your store on board is to talk positively about Dice Masters. Talk about how you really enjoy the game and how you'd like to expand your collection. Use some of your favorite selling points you might use to your friends to convince the shop owner that this is a good investment. Talk about how you think others could really get involved in the hobby and would definitely buy a product if they could just catch the bug. Now, don't lie or try to manipulate the store owner into something he or she doesn't want to do, but be forthcoming about your desire to root your Dice Masters hobby in his or her store. Which leads us to the next step. Assure the store owner that you're interested in building a community of Dice Masters players in their shop, at their tables, buying their product. This is huge. Let's go back to the lying part again. This is not the time to say things like, "This is going to be bigger than Friday Night Magic." As they say, don't let your mouth write checks that your rear can't cash. FNM is a standby for a lot of game stores. It's their bread and butter. I've known more than one shop owner who's told me that it's because of Friday Night Magic that they could also sell board games and minigames. That's a big deal. Instead, present your desire to grow a community of players in his or her store with some grace. Ask them if they'd be interested in running some demo nights for new players, and even offer to help organize and facilitate the demos. Offer to lend out your collection or your extras to new players during those events so that lots of people can get involved. Don't be stingy. Remember, this is an investment for you also to see an active community of players grow. Finally, become a fan of your FLGS. Buy stuff. Show up to events. Make good on your verbal contract with the game store owner to play a real role in all of this. If you agree on events, take them personally. Step up to help lead them. Listen, nothing depresses and hinders momentum like a volunteer organizer or game teacher who shirks his or her duty to pave the way for that beloved game by just not showing up when it counts. Practice good etiquette, don't be late, be ready to play, and be friendly and helpful. Maybe all that sounds like a lot, and it kinda is, but if you're serious about taking a lead in building a community of gamers, you're gonna have to work for it. In the next episode of Refilling Your Dice Bag, I'll talk about how to begin to build a player base for the game and the steps involved to recruit and attract players to the hobby and keep them interested. Thanks for listening. And remember, games are only fun when we're playing them together.
Well, just a couple of weeks ago, we had unveiled our list of the best dice in Uncanny X-Men. And we have done some more testing. We have done some more... we did avoid the plasma What was it again, Evan?
The plasma furnace.
That's right, the plasma furnace. Sorry, thank you. My mind today is just not there.
That would be because of the brain suckers.
That would be it, yes. The brain suckers did not affect the cards, though. So we did see which cards stood up the best and which cards simply fall all over themselves, trying and failing to be thematic. So we have our top 10 most thematic cards from Uncanny X-Men, and we also have each picked a dishonorable mention, our negative a billion, so to speak. Now, you might remember in our earlier top 10 most thematic cards, there was a card or two from this set that did work their way in there. I can think of at least one of those that's actually not on the list at all. And that's because only a few cards were spoiled at that point. And right now, what we have is pretty cool. So let's get it started. My number 10 is higher on Evan's list, so I'll just take a roll of the dice and move on.
Yeah, this seems to be a theme. And before I get into this, I'm going to give everybody some shocking spoilers. X-23 is not on my list. I know everyone was expecting it, but no.
And it was on our earlier lists, too, which is one of the ones I was thinking of. So
yeah. I mean, honestly, once we had the full set and once I actually gave everything a real look over, she wound up being about number 13. Like, there was some good theme there, but she just got beaten out. And my number 10 is Sentinel Archvillain. Because Sentinel Archvillain he's just like, and I show up and blow up the X-Men. And that's Sentinel!
Yeah. He was very close. I liked it. I think there were a lot of... The tough part about this is there were a lot of thematic cards here.
Yeah.
There were a lot of pretty good ones. And we have some overlap, but I was so close on this one. He probably could have, maybe even should have been on the list, but yeah, good choice.
Yeah, I mean, blow up the X-Men. That is Sentinel. Like, if you had described Sentinel in 5 words, blow up the X-Men.
Well, X-Men's hyphenate. I don't know.
Four words, whatever, I can count.
In just a few words, yes.
Yes.
yeah, I can't argue with that. That's a good pick. All right, then. My number 9 is Quicksilver Thanks to Isotope E. And this is when fielded, Quicksilver deals 1 damage to each opposing sidekick. I have to say that what was at least a little bit in my head in this was the Quicksilver scene in Days of Future Past, where he just goes, like, you know, the armed guards, the lackeys, the sidekicks are out there, you know, gonna shoot them with their plastic bullets and everything. And Quicksilver's just, like, zooming through the room so fast that everything is just incredibly slow for him as he sees it. And he just completely befuddles all of them. And this is what this is. Quicksilver zooms out of your reserve pool and befuddles all of the sidekicks and deals damage to them.
And he punches every move.
Nine. Yes.
Yeah. I'll be totally honest. Quicksilver was my number 12.
There you go.
I actually picked former villain because I think that was about, like, it punches everybody. Or I forget exactly what former villain was punching, but it was many things. Because yeah. that is what Quicksilver does, punch all the things. That's honestly why he was pretty high up on this. I mean, I went through pretty much everything. I think my list wound up being about 20 items, so making 12 is not bad.
Definitely.
And yes, Quicksilver is blocked. He deals 1 damage to every opposing character. So.
Oh, you're number 12. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, you try to get him his way, but no, he just punches everybody because he's that fast.
Pretty similar reasoning there, too. Yeah, they did a good job with Quicksilver.
Yeah, all right. No, I think he was a good choice. Yeah, so my number 9 is Pyro's Rare, Uncontrolled, who has you roll your entire used pile and deal damage for every bolt rolled. That's just like, and let's see how much fire we get today. I think it just, you know, sometimes just sort of sputters out. You don't get a lot, and sometimes huge firestorm and everything goes pretty bad. So I felt like that was a really good sort of model of just fire, wild, uncontrolled, who knows what you're going to get, but it's going to set things on fire, and that's what Pyro's about.
I suppose that makes sense. You know, now that I hear you say that anyway, when I was looking at my list, I didn't specifically because of the unpredictable nature, and I felt like kind of like, I don't know, fire's fire. If I shoot you or I don't.
Professor, fire.
That idea makes sense. Yeah. That idea makes sense. So I can't argue too much, but maybe we'll see a little more pyro later. All right. So that leads us to number 8. And that is, for me, Spider-Man's spider sense. This is his rare. Spider-Man takes half damage, rounded down, from fist characters. Now, the fist limitation notwithstanding, I picked this because essentially, spider sense. This is coming at me, I'm going to dodge it. So instead of a big hit, it's a glancing blow. And I think that's kind of the advantage that the spider sense gives to Spider-Man. Now, from fist characters, well, you know, Spider-Man himself is a fist character, and he gets into a lot of fist fights. So I'm fine with that. My favorite Spider-Man-related game is just a giant beat-em-up. So, whatever. Spider-Man Spider-Sense is my number 8.
Yep. He was my number a lot. He was on my list, which means I didn't think he was complete, like, where are your themes? But he was... I think other characters just did it. I think, really, I went and, like... this, but he dodges bolts and all kinds of shenanigans with his spider sense. So
that's fair.
I think it was like, if it was just he takes half damage when blocked or something, then I think that might have got him a little higher on my list. But as it was, I think it's a good thematic card, just not one of the best.
All right.
Or just no, there are better, to rephrase that. As for my number 8, we'll see that later because it was higher on Dave's list.
All right, then. That's going to happen a couple of times. My number 7 was Magneto Field Control. When fielded, you may pay 2 masks to move a character from the field or reserve pool to its owner's prep area. To me, that's kind of Magneto. I'm going to stand out here in front of all of you and just kind of screw up your plans. You know, think like towards the climax of the first X-Men movie when he's like, hey, I'm going to just kind of bend your claws and do all this other stuff to you, and now you're stuck in the Statue of Liberty. That's just kind of what he does. He manipulates things. He moves you away. That's Magneto. So that's exactly what he's doing here. Magneto Field Control is my number 7.
I actually interpret that as like magnetic field control, and it's like moving stuff around. And I can see that, like Magnetos.
Yeah, basically that. Yeah,
that was pretty much my. That was like if there was one of them, and he was. If there was one of them, I think that was good. But I would have liked to see more of him like dealing with. I mean, I don't even know how you'd say dealing with metal, something that messes with like shield characters or something. But
that's where I think we get into an idea we had a while ago, which is it would be cool if the characters had like a trait where, you know, metallic or molten,
right,
or you know, like elemental or other sorts of traits to them, you know, so then Magneto could manipulate metallic characters or something like that, and that would be pretty cool. But that doesn't exist right now, so whatever. But yeah, that's my number 7.
And my number 7 is higher up on Dave's list, so I won't say it right now.
Yeah, oops.
Oops, 2 in a row. I'm very exciting.
My number 6 is also Evan's number 8, and that is good old Mystique. I mean, Mystique. Mystique, alias you. And I just think that this card pretty much nails what Mystique is and what she does. She takes your stats and your abilities. Like, that's Mystique.
Though I notice it's only the attack stat.
Yeah.
Which, it's a little weird. But I guess she's still Mystique. Like, so, the, you know, your giant armor plates or your apocalypse density changing shenanigans. You know, she doesn't quite get those. So, you know, you can still punch her. But, yeah, no. Can't say much. She's just straight up jacking someone's identity.
Yeah, that's...
That's what she's about. That's what she's doing there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's Mystique, and that is that was on both our lists, 6 and 8, respectively. So, yeah, go ahead, Evan.
My number 6 was Sabretooth Survivor, and his shtick is that when he gets knocked out, you spin him down, and then he negates all the damage he's taken. So, and I'm like, man, Sabretooth's one of his big things. He's, you know, he's a regenerator, he's really relentless, he's really... And you know that I think that idea of when he takes enough damage to get knocked out when he's, you know, at his toughest, he just get, you know, he's a little injured, but he comes back fine. I think that's just a really good way of capturing the sort of like a regeneration mechanic. And that's, I you know, given that he's, you know, one of those, you know, like sort of picturesque is not the right word. Given that he's one of sort of the archetypical regenerating characters.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I think that's just a really good way. It's something really thematically capturing his essence. So
yeah, that's a good choice.
I went with it.
Could easily have been on my list, too. Yeah. All right, number five. And for my number five, I went with Professor X Trainer. This is his rare. When Professor X is active, your sidekicks get plus one attack and plus one defense, no matter how many Professor X dice you have fielded. And, of course, he has the global that allows you to do what we lovingly refer to as the thing. I like it. In this case, I like it. In this case, the sidekicks are the mutants in training, and Professor X is honing their abilities, and so they get to attack and defend just a little bit more. It depends on how you view the sidekicks, and sometimes they're the lackeys, and sometimes they are literally the sidekicks, the lesser heroes. And in this case, that's what they are, and Professor X is training them up, and they do a little more damage to you. That's Professor X. That's what he does. He teaches you how to be more effective with your powers.
Yeah, I definitely think that the global, too, just sort of has, like, sort of the Professor X feel of, you know, letting you sort of work stuff over. And, oh, yeah, now you can, you can come back and do things a little faster. So, you know, getting a little better, using your mental powers to their utmost. So I think just the global, too, adds on to it. It's entirely possible, you know, see another Professor X somewhere on my list.
Alrighty.
My number five was Bishop XSE, which I believe refers to a group he was in during Civil War in Marvel.
Thank you, because I was looking at it, and all I could think of SXE is like a specific model of a car or something. Like, oh, I got the Corolla XSE.
No, I think it refers to some team he was on, at the very least. I believe it was something he was on during Civil War and possibly before that, but I could be wrong. I'm sure someone will correct me if that is the case.
Right.
His thing is that every two damage he takes during combat, he heals one damage to something. And his ability is when he gets blasted with stuff, he blasts back stronger. He blasts back. I would have kind of liked to see it like 1-to-1 or, you know, 1-to-2 even output.
Well,
like he's coming back stronger. But that, I think, was a balanced thing. So nevertheless, I think it really, really captures the whole like, and he just sort of redirects forces around.
And any system is going to lose energy.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing that's interesting about the X-Men is that as much as it is, you know, it's fantastical and it's superheroes and all that, they do attempt to put a lot of science into it. And, you know, we have some X-Men who are very strong scientists. Now, of course, there's other shenanigans
going on. Sometimes literally strong scientists.
There you go. But, of course, there's other shenanigans going on, but just in general, it can't be exactly a 1-to-1.
Right.
Especially not in that world, which does pay attention to a little bit of that. So, yeah.
Some attention to physics.
Some. Only some.
A tiny bit.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I really like I think it's really good about capturing his mutant power, so.
Well, that brings us to number four, and my number four is Cerebro Mutant Hunter. This is the rare. Place Cerebro on a dais card. It remains there until you or a card effect removes it. At the start of your turn, you may move Cerebro to your used pile to search your bag for a die from that card and roll it. What is Cerebro? It is a mutant hunting device. It allows people to be found. It allows Professor X to find his students, to find the X-Men, and all of that kind of stuff. That is exactly what this card does. So Cerebro Mutant Hunter is on the top half of my list as a result.
I think I might have just like misread that as one of the other ones which aren't quite as thematic, and it just like completely slipped from my list. I think it probably should. I don't know if it'll have made necessarily the top 10, but it probably should have been at least on my list, and for whatever reason it's not.
Well, to be fair, I always really wanted the tutor, and now we have it, and so
Yeah, so it was
love.
Right, yeah, in your forefront.
Yeah.
Forebrain, foremind, I don't know a word with four in it. Speaking of four, my number four was higher on Dave's list, so I don't get to say anything again.
But that's the last one of those.
Rest were done.
Yep. All right, so number three. My number three is Pyro St. John Allardyce. And that's his common.
St. John Allardyce.
Exactly. Well, I like the name just for this game, yes. But that's his common. When Pyro is blocked, he deals one damage to your opponent. Well, Pyro's pretty fiery. If you block him, you're going to get a little bit burned. It's kind of like a Thorns ability you'll see in a lot of games, but it makes sense to me. You know, you can't just stop fire. You're going to get singed, you know, and that's exactly what happens here. So I thought that was pretty thematic by its own right. But, of course, all the Pyros.
Yeah, all the Pyros do a pretty good job with the uncommon being when you shoot fire when he comes, when he attacks. So.
Yeah, all of that's good, but for me, Pyro, St. John, Allardyce, all your dice. How about
Allardyce? All your dice are belong to us.
Yes.
Okay. My number three was Scarlet Witch Unity Squad, who on the turn after she's shielded makes your opponent re-roll one die from their initial roll. It's probability manipulation, and her energy blasts are like hex bolts, so you know, hexes, curses, probability stuff. It's just all Scarlet Witch theme, and it's a pretty cool effect if you think about it too. So I just think that was really, really, you know, emblematic of, but in a game that's about rolling dice, a character who does stuff with probability, it is literally shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah, I like it. I think there's another version of it that is perhaps more thematic than that, but you know, perhaps we'll see something about that up the line.
Yeah, maybe we'll comment about that in a bit.
My number two is Red Hulk Thunderbolt Ross, and this was also your number seven, Evan.
Yep.
It's pretty straightforward. It's just common. If Red Hulk is damaged in an attack phase but not knocked out, spin him up one level at the end of the turn. He gets hit, he's not down for the count, he's going to get angrier and more powerful. What more can you say? It's Hulk. They've nailed Hulk's theme in Dice Masters.
Actually, Red Hulk works a little differently. He's sort of like fiery, and he actually rises in temperature as he gets angrier.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, I'm actually a fan of his. So
okay.
I sort of read up on him a while back and was reading some of his comics. But regardless... I think, honestly, with this version of Red Hulk, they did a better job than even the Green Hulk. You know, the one of his, I think, was when he takes damage, he gets a bonus to his stats. I think the rolling up, the spinning up mechanic, that's an even more visceral way of saying he's getting more powerful when you get him angry.
Right.
So, that's...
WizKids has done a good job with that throughout their games, of course, in clicks, as Hulk takes more damage, instead of weakening in spots, he actually gains more attack power as you click him down. So, you know, or at least that's very common with a lot of the Hulk. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a very good thematic card.
Mm-hmm.
My number two was also Dave's number 10, and it is another Scarlet Witch. Scarlet Witch controls probability, her super rare, who lets you do another round of rerolling every turn. Again, shooting fish in a barrel. You have a character who does stuff with probability. She lets you roll your dice more.
Yeah, I mean...
It's almost a no-brainer.
She was obviously on my list. She had to be. It's what she does. That said, it's not my favorite. It's an obvious way to show it in this game. For somebody who manipulates probability, it's almost a fourth wall break, though, which is why it's a little lower for me, because of, I mean, that's what she's going to do, but I don't know, how does she really show those abilities, like, in the comics? What is it that she does to manipulate events? Because I'm a little less familiar with that. But...
Oh, my. Lots and lots and lots of things. She's done things from depower most of the mutants in the world to help wish the Phoenix out of existence to other various things. So, I mean, she's sort of built with, you know, she can kind of do anything.
She makes sense. The ability makes sense, and I don't know, I'm not 100% sure how else they could have implemented it so well. That said, the reason that she was 10 instead of, like, number 2 on my list is because I still feel it's almost a little too meta.
And I love that, so that's kind of why it was so high. And honestly, that's why she showed up twice, because I went there and I was like, well, Unity Squad is getting, like, the sort of, like, the hex curse, the curse thing, and then controls probability is just, you know, that's perfect. It's so meta, and it's exactly what it should be. And I was like, well, I should only pick one, because I don't want to have the same character on my list twice.
But,
or do I?
Right.
And then I put her as my 2 and 3.
Fair enough. Well, my number 1 was also your number 4, and that is Kitty Pryde, Shadow Cat. This is the one where she is unblockable when she comes out, and that's Kitty Pryde. She's unblockable. Here she is. You can't hit her.
Oh, she popped through a wall, and now she popped through a wall and punched you in the face, and punched some guy in a face. So
that's
what she does. I can't disagree with that. I mean, I kind of put the Scarlet Witches ahead just because it hit all the right buttons. And my number one, which I will talk about in a moment, which I just thought nailed everything right.
Fair enough. This is Kitty Pryde. It's exactly what she does. And that nailed the theme for me.
Yeah. And speaking of my number one, that is Professor X recruiting young mutants. You know, his ability lets you take sidekicks, which, you know, David already talked about, as, you know, the sidekicks are the students, you know, the young mutants. His ability just lets you take them and put them, you know, go into your bag and roll them. It's literally recruiting young mutants from your bag.
Well,
and we've already talked about how the global is also, you know, very sort of related to finding your mutants and getting them, you know, finding your mutants and getting them to where you need them to. He hits it on his not just on his ability, but on his global. And I could have just as easily put Trainer there. They're very similar in that sense. But I think the idea of, you know, this guy recruits young mutants. What does the card do? Go into your bag and get your sidekick dice.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same reasoning. I mean, he recruits young mutants. Well, in my case, he trains young mutants, and that's what he does. So, it's hard to go wrong there. A good pick all around. I mean, despite some overlaps, there were also a lot of cards that were not common to both of our lists. So, I mean, we're talking about 16-ish, I think, that are extremely thematic. And even then, you know, we probably could have had the third Pyro around here, too, and other things like that. So, I mean, they do a good job with the theme generally.
Yeah, I mean, and I was trying to keep my short list, quote-unquote, to two or so, to, you know, one card per character. And, you know, if I hadn't done that, this list would have been like 30-40 cards long.
Yeah.
And that's just stuff that I thought was really thematic.
Yeah.
So they've honestly done a really good job with that.
That said, they don't always nail it. We have our dishonorable mentions, and I don't know about you, but I couldn't pick just one of this. My dishonorable mention is Storm. Not just one particular Storm, but Storm. The only great thing I have to say about Storm is that she has a 2-cost variant. Otherwise, I don't completely understand this whole, like, action die manipulation thing.
I guess you could maybe say it's like, you know, she's using the power of wind to blow away ill effects, but yeah, I don't...
I thought about that, but not every action die can be blown away.
She blows away the imprisonment. I don't know.
I guess?
Blows away the take that villain.
But it just,
why is she a villain in the first place?
It doesn't make a ton of sense.
I know. I completely agree. She's not one of the best. She was pretty thematic in the original set. Here, Not so much.
No, it's not that she's wholly useless. I mean, certainly.
Right. Oh, I'm not going to say
you're dealing
useless.
With imprisoned or, right. or something like that. You know, her superhero might be useful, and that's another cheap superhero. We talked about that a few episodes ago, but thematically, nowhere near what she offered in the first set. And I think that's where it's a pretty glaring drop off from how thematic she was in the first place.
Yeah, and I'll note that, you know, being thematic or not thematic is not a statement on your usefulness one way or another. But, you know, I there are definitely uses for the storms, just not for being emblems of theme.
Right. How about you, Evan?
So there are several characters in this set, don't get me wrong, that I was very excited to see. And the one that disappointed me most was Juggernaut. Because, you know, Juggernaut, I'm like, oh man, he's going to have momentum. He's going to be all about momentum. He has to attack every turn. He gets bonuses for, you know, attacking consecutive turns. Maybe he'll be able to, like, attack, and then after he does his damage, attack someone else. And then he, like, does all these weird sidekick shenanigans. And I'm like, what does this have to do with Juggernaut? And,
yeah.
I mean, it's interesting abilities. And, you know, maybe you could argue, okay, you can move one of your sidekicks to use pile to give him a bonus. So he's, like, punching. He's just train stomping through one of the side, but well, it's one of your own sidekicks, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's just a thematic mess. And I was really sad because he was literally one of those guys who was just dancing in my head of all the things they can do to, like, represent his just going on through things.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't see why there's not something that involves Juggernaut just bowling over everybody. I mean, the only justification I can think of, somewhat similar to yours, which is he's going to hurt friendlies just as much as he's going to hurt foes, and that's why your sidekicks are doing that. Or maybe, like, he's going and the sidekicks just have to, like, dive out of the way so that they don't get bowled over as well. But, I mean, that's I feel like that's really a stretch.
Yeah, his uncommon lets him block more things.
Yeah, I don't get it. Well, and you know, here's the other thing. I know he's beefy, but they made him a shield.
Yeah.
He's beefy and metallic, but they made him a shield. And
He's the irresistible force and not so much the immovable object.
The quintessential shield is like Iron Man, who has all this damage prevention and redirection.
Or Captain America.
Yeah. This is not a shield character.
No, but it's like, I don't know if I would have put him as a fist either, because I don't know. Maybe. I think that's the only one that it would make sense, but
I think, I mean, fist to me is not just like I'm punching you with my fist, it's just physical damage.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. But yeah, I'm with you there.
He needs his own symbol, a headbutt.
So that's it. That's our top 10. A headbutt, my God.
The headbutt icon.
We need that. Oh, God. What would that even look like? I don't even want to speculate.
Dave cutting in once more on a junky mic. Now we're going to hear from Chris, because this is something else that we're going to have with Randy and Chris contributing to the feature topic. So here we go.
Hey there, Chris checking in. My top thematic card from the Uncanny X-Men set has got to be Cyclops Field Leader. Now, I'm a big Cyclops fan. He's my favorite X-Men. He's probably my top three favorite Marvel characters. So there's a little bit of bias there, I admit. But Cyclops Field Leader, it's such a cool card. I mean, just imagine him taking the field and he grabs up command. He's barking orders. He's calling target priority. I just think the card is awesome. And then the text ability really reflects what Cyclops does when he's on the field. My dishonorable mention for theme goes to Juggernaut. Now, I wanted to do something different than what Evan put, but honestly, I could not come up with anything else. Juggernaut is that bad. I mean, I think in all three of his iterations, all he does is use sidekicks to buff himself, or he knocks him out, moves him around. I don't get that. Juggernaut is like the one-man tank. He's like the one-man army. And here we have him playing around with sidekicks. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And I gotta admit, that's pretty bad. Back to you guys.
Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of the list of our top 10 most thematic cards. what do you think? What are the hits and what are the misses here, other than Juggernaut and Storm? What works? What doesn't? We want to hear from you. So mailbag at thereservepool.com. You can leave comments. You can review us on iTunes. You can do all that kind of stuff. But otherwise, we're so happy that you chose to spend your time with us. There are plenty of ways to spend your time, whether during a commute or just doing stuff around the house or whatever you're doing. And we appreciate that you gave some of it to us. Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. I'm Dave.
And I'm Evan.
And this is The Reserve Pool.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye. And thanks. Yep. Probably 16, 17 that we thought were extremely...